Welcome to episode 10 of the All Things Food podcast. I'm your host as always, Nikki Hursthaus. Well, what a season it has been with such a wonderful range of women in food. And this last episode is no exception. I was literally fizzing with excitement when Alice said she'd come onto my podcast. For those who don't know Alice, aka Alice in Frames, aka Alice Zaslavsky, she has been making huge waves in the world of food. Some of you may know Alice from her time on MasterChef Australia, but since MasterChef, Alice has been working on so many exciting ventures. Alice is the culinary correspondent for ABC News Breakfast and ABC Radio nationally. She is the award-winning author of the cookbook In Praise of Veg, and also she has another cookbook, Alice's A to Z. Alice was formerly a school teacher and created Phenomenom and its Nomcast podcast, which you'll hear more about in this episode today. But without further ado, let's jump right into this conversation with Alice. So welcome to the podcast, Alice.
Thank you for having me, Nikki.
Oh, thank you so much. I remember a friend sent a podcast that you were on sometime last year, and I remember listening to it and I just thought, everything she's saying is everything that's going on in my head myself. And I just thought, he's the most perfect guest to come on to my podcast and just dive into the world of food, and so we can share your philosophy with even more people.
Here for you. And all those people. I'm really glad that things that I say resonate, because I do feel like there are more and more of us saying the same stuff. And the more that we can amplify each other's voices and, you know, get that message out there, the more we can drown out the bullshit that we've been fed for too long.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Absolutely agree. So most of my listeners are New Zealand based, and many will have heard of you, but for those that are new to you, I'd really love it if you could take us back to where your story with food really begins.
Well, for those that I haven't yet met, I'm probably best known for being a broadcaster, a cookbook author. So In Praise of Veg is my latest. Alice's Food A to Z, which is for kids, was my first, and it's back out for Christmas 2021 as well. And I also do a bunch of, you know, TV stuff. I'm the News Breakfast culinary correspondent for the ABC. But all of that couldn't have been possible without what came before it, and that was a lifetime of being obsessed by food, enough when I was a teacher that I would try and slip lesson plans around food into English history and geography classes. And then when I tried to slip a full elective into a year eight unit about food, my heads of school said, you know, why don't you go and get skilled up, and we don't think you'll get the numbers. So I went and got skilled up, and to get the numbers, I went on a little show called MasterChef Australia, and that really kind of catapulted me into the food media and into the hearts and minds of people across 180 countries. So, you know, it's been a real kind of whirlwind decade of my life, and I'd like to think I'm just getting started, really.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And I mean, was being on MasterChef something that you had ever considered prior?
No way. No, I was not a MasterChef watcher. I watched it season one. I found it really curious and interesting. You know, I was first year teaching. Yeah. But really, yeah, I wasn't like a MasterChef diehard, and I'd never imagined that I would audition for the program. But my now brother-in-law, my boyfriend at the time's brother, so Nick's brother was the marketing manager at William Anglis, and he was hosting the MasterChef auditions at that TAFE, and he said they were looking for people with personality who could cook, and he had the inside word that they hadn't yet found who they were looking for. And I also had a message from an ex-boyfriend, you know, saying, hey, I just saw they're auditioning for MasterChef, I reckon you should do it. And I was like, oh my god, I think the universe is telling me I should do this thing. And so, you know, I'm a big believer in kind of reading the room and reading the signs, and so I just did it. And I didn't expect to do as well as I did. You know, you kind of hope for the best, expect the worst. And I did a lot better than I thought I would. I finished up just before finals week, pirouetted out of the MasterChef kitchen. And within months, I had an audition for a kids' cooking game show, a publishing contract for Alice's Food A to Z. You know, the publisher happened to see the episode where I was eliminated that said, I've got a, you know, Alice is now writing a book about food for kids. And so she got in touch and said, how far into it are you and do you have a publisher? And it was just like, I've got an idea. No, I don't have a publisher, so let's do this. And I definitely think, you know, people ask me, do you think that you'd be where you are without MasterChef? I think I would be in a similar field. I really think that knowing how passionate I've always been about food and knowing the avenues now, the channels that are available to people where we don't have to necessarily kind of be catapulted into things through reality television, I think I would be somewhere within that sphere. But you can't deny the power of that kind of level of reach and platform on a commercial scale. And I also think it was a real training ground for some of the skills that I acquired, and not just cooking skills, but, you know, being awake and working for 18 hours and being camera ready whenever I need, you know, just like grab at the drop of a hat. I had some of my toughest moments, but, you know, through that, through the fire, you come out and you're more resilient and you realize that you can do a lot more than you expect. So, yeah, I definitely think it was formative. And people contact me every year saying, you know, I really want to audition for MasterChef. And sometimes, well, the first question I ask them is, what do you want to do? You know, if you do you want to be a professional chef? Probably MasterChef's not for you. You should probably go and do an apprenticeship. But what do you want to achieve? If it's something that you feel like you need a platform for, then, yeah, it's pretty hard to beat. But you just have to be prepared for being kind of wrung out physically, emotionally, mentally.
Yeah, really pushed to the nth degree.
It was the best of times, it was the worst of times.
Yeah. And, I mean, before all of that happened, you were a teacher.
Yes.
And I guess were there any other influences growing up that has really shaped your passion for food?
I am very fortunate to say that my family have always been into food, and so it was never an option or even a question of whether I would be interested in it. I was so lucky. My parents travelled a lot for what they do. They're both academics, and they would take me with them because it was easier than trying to find a babysitter. So I got to experience food from all over the world, and it just completely, I think because they value it so much, it was just implied that food has intrinsic value. And beyond, you know, fuel, food is about the story, the connection, the experience. It's sensual, all of that. So I'm you know, a lifelong lover. lover of food. And my grandparents, these stories come up again and again. So many foodie people that I talk to have similar experiences, which is why I'm reverse engineering it with our toddler, with Hazel, aka the nut, is that we really are actively, explicitly obsessed with food. And in front of her, we do everything. Yesterday we were potting, she's 2.5, we were potting broad beans together. You know, she's learnt how to slurp oysters. She's currently learning how to use chopsticks.
Yeah.
And I know that the gift that I've been given in having this connection with the edible ecosystem, and that's a gift that I want to impart upon her as well.
Yeah, and like it's starting at a young age. Oh, it's just incredible.
I'm going to say something really controversial that you're welcome to grab. I think that a love of food doesn't just start from a young age. A love of food starts in utero.
Because
as, you know, as I remember when I was pregnant, I was really drawn to the foods of my childhood and the comforts of this, you know, sort of Soviet foods. And then I kind of had this like real unicorn pregnancy where for the second and third trimester, I was like feeling my absolute best, just felt amazing. And I was eating my weight in green leafies and just heaps of veg. Also because I was testing recipes for In Praise of Veg. So it was perfect timing. And therefore, I really think I've passed that on. And research has shown that you're setting up not only the gut microbiome for your child, but you're also setting up so much through the amniotic fluid that I really do think that if you want your child to eat widely, you need to push through the nausea and the kind of like the temptation for brown and white foods that is a natural kind of part of most pregnancies, and just really eat as widely as possible, and also not absorb the fear that's very much entrenched in Western kind of right. I'm seeing the nod. It's just so unfortunate that there's so much fear and anxiety around what foods you can and can't eat when you're preggo. Mm. Like, your body will tell you when it's something that's not right for you. Use your senses. Don't let somebody else set that fear up, because how are you internalizing that, and how's that then going to manifest in your child?
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it, that the palate and the taste preferences can be defined even before they're born.
Yeah. I remember Nigella saying that she was really keen for her kids to eat greens, and so she ate her weight in broccoli when she was pregnant, and her daughter's favorite food continues to be broccoli. Mm. So that's not an accident. That's a conscious effort.
Yeah. And I guess once people know that, it's being brave to explore different tastes. Yes. And different flavors, different cuisines.
Yeah, have courage. And also role modeling is so important too, because your kids absorb so much information and so much behavior around the table beyond just what's on their plate. They're watching how you behave, what you say about what's on the table. And if you're a picky eater, you got to fake it till you make it. Just for the next kind of 5 years. If you've got a toddler, you eat widely, because I promise you it'll just make your job so much easier. I remember we had some family friends around, and they hadn't, at the time he was 8 years old, and they kept complaining that he just didn't eat anything beyond sort of brown and white, and, you know, didn't like this, didn't like that. And then as soon as dinner came to the table, his dad was just like, oh, nah, does that have this in it? Oh, no, I'm not going to have that. But, hello? Like, can you hear yourself? And because your child can hear you. So careful the things you say and do.
Yeah, yeah. Now, Alice, I guess if you had to define your food philosophy, how would you sort of describe it?
In three letters. J-O-Y. Food is joy. You have to find the food that it brings you joy, but also in connecting with people around the table, in knowing that you're supporting small producers, in the memories that you're evoking when you're eating foods that have significance to you. All of that comes back to that word for me. You know, that word is so deeply kind of, it's just a feeling, isn't it? It's just like that. Like, it just radiates out of you. If I had to explain it in a blurby kind of way, I would say that my food philosophy is veg forward. It's a positive food philosophy. I'm all about what you eat more of.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I'm all about an inclusive way of talking about food, and particularly recipes, because I think one thing, unfortunately, that happens in the foodie bubble is that we say, oh, you have to use this, or you have to use that, or, oh, no, I wouldn't substitute this or that. And it's just like, whatever you can eat, like, if you've got dietaries, I'm pro dietaries. Let's see what we can do so that you can still be at my table and we can still have a delicious meal together and still have a joy-filled evening. Does that make sense? Is that enough?
Yeah.
And I believe as well, I mean, one quote that everybody seems to quote back at me, and I almost regret putting on my website. I'm doing a website redesign at the moment and considering not including it again. But I think it encapsulates a lot, is that notion of food literacy.
Yeah.
I believe that food and understanding it goes beyond, I've said it already 100 times, Nikki, but food is so much more than what you put in your mouth, and it's one way that we can teach kids particularly to be more conscious and conscientious consumers,
mm.
particularly as we move into a really critical time for this planet. We can make so much change by voting with our dollar, and particularly if we're privileged enough to have to be able to afford to buy and shop local, you know, if we're able to support, et cetera, et cetera. We owe it to the future generations, to the future of this world, to do what we can and to value food, to put it up there as high as possible on our hierarchy of needs.
Absolutely.
and needs to know.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think sometimes the value of food is a little bit lost when there's not a connection to food and we don't know where it's come from. We don't know how it's been made. And it's not until people get stuck in, hands in, work out how long does it take to actually grow something from a seed and how long does it take to make something, you know, like ricotta or different cheeses. And once there's actually that knowledge of how long that does take, then sort of I guess the value becomes more apparent.
Yeah. And I'm a huge believer in outsourcing. I love supporting people that are making artisanal produce and products so that I don't have to. You know, you mentioned cheeses. Like, there are amazing cheesemakers in Australia, in New Zealand, that we should be supporting because, again, you know, they're supporting the primary industries to get the produce that they need in order to create what it is that they do. So, like, it's a real kind of knock-on effect if we do disconnect, 100% a knock-on. Yeah, and also taste is nutrition. So if we prioritize our enjoyment of our meal, then we'll probably probably feel better for it. But because nutritious food is tasty food and because nutritious food needs to be grown in healthy soil, it needs to be, you know, harvested and then sold fairly quickly, which means it's probably local. You know, all of those things, I guess if we're led by our taste buds, it's not a bad thing to lean into your cravings. You know, that gets a bad rap.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, in the world of nutrition and dietitians and all these things, it does.
Yeah, but don't you think, like, what I'm really excited about and really heartened by, because I have had such a, particularly since the publication of Impraise of Veg, I've had a chance to connect with lots of fantastic nutritionists and dietitians across both countries, across the ANZ, and I'm really heartened to know that there are so many more people that are like super anti-diet culture and very vocal about that and just kind of like shining a light and not kind of quietly behind closed doors saying, hey, is that an okay thing to say? It's just like now it's out in the open. It's like, don't say that. Don't do that to yourself.
Yeah.
Don't do that to your kids, but definitely don't do that to yourself. It's not going to, no good.
And a lot of, I guess, your views around that, it comes through in the fact that all of your messaging is positive. And it's about let's include these things, let's eat more of this, and let's find the positivity and joy in food.
Yeah. And also I say, you know, I missed this out from my food philosophy. I don't yuck someone else's yum. I learned that very early because you don't know what's going on in their lives. You don't know that might be the thing that brings them joy because it was their grandparent passed away recently and they used to go to that particular place with that grandparent and that was what they ate and it's not all the time or whatever it is that you just do not know. So I never, particularly on the radio, people call in on a weekly basis and tell me, you know, what they're putting on their sandwiches or what they're having for dinner. And it's just like, great. How exciting that we can, that you care enough to connect, you know, with me about this. So, yeah, never yuck someone's yum. Won't come to any good.
No, definitely not. Now, so your first book was focused for kids. And did that really come about after I guess, being a teacher as well.
Oh, yeah. My first book is literally a textbook. It's an A to Z of food, and every page has kind of an ingredient, whether it's a fruit, a vegetable, a nut. You know, there's a page, four pages on cheese. and it's just, again, it's really positive. And especially when I did the reprint, which is coming this month, I was really mindful to go back over it and just make sure, like, you know, knowing what I know now, because this was 2015.
Yeah.
Now in 2021, am I still happy? And do I still back this message?
Yeah.
Especially having now kind of seen the research, connected with people who are in the space, just being more attuned to it, more sensitive to it. And I'm really proud to say that, you know, there were very few changes. So, you know, go past Alice. I'm glad I knew that stuff kind of implicitly.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess it was just more innate around like the way you were brought up and your philosophy with food. Yes. And I guess overall relationship with food.
But also coming from a teaching background, you don't give kids judgment-filled lessons. Like, that's just not what you do, because you want to pique their curiosity.
Mm.
And you don't walk into, let's say for history, I wouldn't walk into a year eight classroom and say, the plague. You're not going to be interested in this. I wasn't interested in it when I was your age. So, you know, let's just learn about it. And yet, why do we expect kids to be interested in trying new foods if we put our own baggage onto it too? So,
yeah
open-hearted, joy-filled, curiosity-laden.
Yeah, which is fantastic. And now, how does that all link in with Phenomenon?
Ugh. I'm so glad you asked, Nikki. So Phenomenon came about because the growers of vegetables in Australia, so Hort Innovation, who are the grower-owned not-for-profit that look after the sector, they identified that, we know the stats, only 5 or 6% of kids are getting their recommended daily intake of vegetables, which is really alarming, but it's actually not that different to adults.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I think the hope was that if they were able to connect with the kids, then maybe it would kind of be like a positive pester power effect. And also because I think parents do make choices of what they buy based on what they expect their kids to eat. So, you know, I think what they wanted was some sort of tool to help empower kids to do better, or to help empower teachers to teach kids to be more curious and open around the dinner table. So we created Phenomenon, which is a 100% free digital toolkit, and it's full of springboard videos and podcast episodes called Nomcast, which I recommend you listen to once you're done listening to Nikki's podcast. and it's lesson plans, all curriculum aligned. Those lesson plans are being used not just in Australia, even though they're aligned to the Australian curriculum, it's not so different to other countries as well. So certainly if you're an educator listening to this, highly recommend. But it's also designed for not just schools, it's designed for home as well. So how can parents listen to the podcast together with their kids in the car? And then what kind of conversation is that going to potentially start around the dinner table to open up their minds to trying something new? Because we know that exposure of to a new food means 10, 15 times, but it doesn't have to be in your mouth 10, 15 times. You could need 10, 15 times until it reaches your mouth. So how do we expose you to that vegetable over and over again in a way that's still engaging? That's where Phenomenon comes in. It's won international awards. We're about to bring out more episodes, which is really exciting, of the podcast.
Yeah, exciting.
We're also about to be featured as a resource on ABC Education. So it'll be accessible. It's like ABC Education is the most used, most trusted education platform in the country, so teachers will use it. But the thing that's really important and kind of some people can't kind of wrap their heads around it, is that it's not designed to be taught in isolation. So much of food education happens like during a home economics class, or, you know, once a week we learn about this, or we have to go into a separate space. But what that does is it others this understanding that actually is part of everyday life. So why can't we make food part of maths, history, English, science, art, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's what Phenomenon does. It's integrated into every subject in the curriculum, and it's designed to be, you know, on in the car, on the way to sport, or you know, you can watch the episode with your kids at home, whatever it is. So, yeah, I hope it I mean, people seem to like it. I get nice messages. Feels good. Feels good to do good.
Good. Yeah, well, it's obviously having an impact, and it's great to hear that it's going to be growing as well.
Thank you. I've done research as well, because it was government and industry funded. We've done we've done the post kind of assessment of how kids are responding to it, and whether it's having a potential for impact. And so 2/3 of parents were excited to go out and grab Brussels sprouts after watching a Brussels sprouts egg, which is exciting because it means that they have more faith in their kids eating it. And 3/4 of teachers said that they would use the resource once a week, which is really exciting. But most exciting is that 3/4 of students said that they would go home and speak about what they learned on the series with their parents or caregivers and family, which, like, for anyone that's got kids that they sit around the table and you ask them what they learned at school, chances are they're not going to, they don't care. They're not going to tell you. They've forgotten already. So that's really, that's the stat that I'm most inspired by.
And that's just fantastic for the families where the kids are bringing that new knowledge into the household as well.
Exactly. That's right. Yeah. Pester power.
Yeah, absolutely. So in praise of Veg, the most colourful, vibrant cookbook out there. How did that all begin?
I knew I had another book in me, and I knew that it needed to be veg driven because of all the work I'd been doing with Phenomenon. Actually, in 2016, I did a 365 days of vegetables challenge on my socials and in my life, where I was just like, how can I get more veg into my life? And it was just so fun. But what I identified is that whenever I went to find a cool quote, you know how you do like a social post and you got your pretty picture of a veg, and then you want to do an interesting quote about that veg from an author or a thinker? Most of the quotes were negative. That's what I realized that veg had a real identity problem.
Yeah.
A real kind of, it needed a rebrand. So that's where In Praise of Veg came about in terms of the philosophy of the book. I wanted to provide a completely different perspective on veg that was full of excitement, that wasn't all health focused, although functional benefits, you know, do feature, because I mean, it would be remiss of me not to mention that how fantastic veg is for you. But I think sometimes people lean on that too much. It's like, I'll just eat it because it's good for you.
Yeah.
No, doesn't work for kids. Doesn't work for grown-ups. Tell me why it's delicious and how I can make it more delicious.
Yeah.
And so then I used all those insights that I had gleaned from Phenomenon through all our research, and I put it into a consumer-facing book. Close to 500 pages, over 150 recipes, color-coded, because one of the kind of realizations that I came to is that people don't actually know what the vegetable is called. So how can you expect them to learn more about it if they can't even find it in an index? So
yeah.
Particularly for veg box buyers, it's like, open your veg box. What's this weird white thing? Ah, fennel. Boom. And what I didn't realize at the time, or hoped would happen, and it did, is because the book's so thick, the color coding on the side has actually created this beautiful rainbow on the outer edge, which is just, as you say, it's a feast for the eyes. And when you flip through it, it's just the IPOV flip is real. And then it came to developing the recipes and writing the book itself. And I worked with a fantastic food editor, actually, who's based in New Zealand, Sam Parrish, who's just phenom. Sam's Moff Moff, very worth a follow. And I had an incredible team at Murdoch. The illustrator, Vera Bibita, is the same illustrator as Phenomenon. So it's a really kind of tight, contained point of view, I think, the book. And the thing that's most exciting to me is I think that the success of In Praise of Veg, which has sold out over and over again, it's onto its sort of 6th, maybe 7th reprint.
Wow, that's fantastic.
It sold through. Germany went to reprint after a month. It's been translated into Dutch, into German, into Korean. It's going to North America next year. So I think that this book is the harbinger of change in how people want to perceive vegetables. It's like the canary down the coal mine. And if you start to see more veg forward and veg driven and veg positive language and recipes and books out there, just know that it's because we are on the precipice of a paradigm shift, because people are ready and willing to stop letting their child self, who had a bad time with vegetables that were overboiled and under-seasoned, they're ready to open their hearts and minds to vegetables again, which is very exciting to me. And I'm just really kind of happy. And I do think the pandemic plays a role in that, because one of the things that's happened through it is people are more, I think people are taking or want to take more responsibility for their own personal health. They want to control the controllables, which one thing that you can control, you know, is your ideally as much as you can is your well-being, and they're recognizing that food can have a huge role in that.
Yeah.
And also that because it's more accessible for people to have veg boxes and produce delivered to the doorstep, it's kind of making it easier and easier for people to eat fresh food. And I also think that the pandemic has encouraged a lot of people to step into the kitchen maybe for the first time. And now that they're there, they're like, okay, well, I've done this. I've made bolognese. What else can I do?
Yeah.
Boom, 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 boom.
Yeah. And I
exciting.
There have been some positives for people just advancing their cooking skills and
100%.
Having the time to open those recipe books that have been sitting on the shelves.
Yeah, totally.
Which is, you know, silver linings with these things.
Silver lining. That's right. I'm a glass half full kind of person. In fact, I'm a glass full person. Half full. Half full of water, half full of air. Full.
Yeah. And I guess from my perspective as a dietitian, and, you know, everything you've talked about with veg, it's just so true. When we harp on about the health benefits all the time, and it's not the key to getting people to eat it. And I think that's what was just like so exciting about Impreza Veg, was because it was so colourful, it's so vibrant. It's like it makes veggies seem, you know, they are so exciting, but it actually brings them to life for all these people who haven't experienced that.
Totally. And it's saying that hedonism and health are not mutually exclusive. And in fact, they're very mutually inclusive because you can have the best time with Brussels sprouts. You really can. Oh, my God. It's just about knowing how not to overcook them and about what goes with what. So, you know, I've got a spreadsheet. I've got a veg matrix in the book specifically for those people who kind of grew up watching their parents and grandparents overcook veg, which almost all vegetables really benefit from being undercooked, you know, probably less time than you think, except for, say, something like pumpkin. I think pumpkin can be like over roasted and it still tastes delish.
Yeah.
And the other thing that really benefits from some extra cooking is eggplant, because people undercook eggplant and then you get that kind of knitting on the roof of your mouth. That's the nightshade action, just going beep, 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 like chili, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, just cook it for longer than you think. But, yeah, that's what the veg matrix is all about.
I love that. Thanks. And one thing I was having a look at just before was you're branching into food products.
Yes. I need to get it to New Zealand.
Yeah, yes, I was just about to say, talk to me about Timami.
Oh, Timami is the best. I am really glad. Timami kind of came to me around the time when it was sort of 6 months after the book had dropped. I just said to myself, I've got some time on my hands now. No way. But I realized that because of the reception that Impreza Veg got, people were really keen to pick up what I was putting down. And I've spent so long recommending products and kind of telling people what I think is delicious and hoping that it's still delicious when they buy it, and judging other people's deliciousness. So I know what I like. And I actually came to the realization that if I want to recommend something and know that it's going to be delish, I need to cut out the middleman and make it myself. And I ask myself what it is that the people need. What can I give the people that they really want but maybe just don't know it yet? They want more umami in their life. Savoriness is really beneficial for satiety, so like that satisfaction of eating. It's also, it gives food that kind of X factor, that oomph. So Timami is two ingredients. And it's literally what I use all the time, tomato paste, and what I'm really excited to introduce people to, black garlic. Yeah. And it's those two ingredients together. Black garlic, I think, is like the new truffle. If I had to describe the flavor, it's like a caramelized funk. It's sweet, but not got any sugar in it, aside yeah. from its own natural sugars. It's just that the garlic has been cooked on a really low temperature for 40 days.
Wow.
So it breaks down, the color changes to black, and it has, you know, the Maillard reaction that you get when you caramelize onions. Mm. Imagine that times 100.
Mm.
So Tumami's flavor, if I had to describe it, it's mighty. In the mighty, not with a G-H, but a T-E, so like a mite, in the sense that you can spread it on toast with butter and yeah. it's got that kind of, you know, X factor. But what I really like is that it is bright, so it's fruity. The tomatoes that we use are Australian organic tomatoes. The black garlic that we use is Victorian garlic that's been cooked, but we know exactly who it is, right? So
yeah.
it's like, you know, I mentioned right at the top of this, what a bookend, what a signpost. It's all about supporting small producers and continuing the sustainability of the industry. And I can do that by facilitating the connection between grower and consumer directly.
Yeah.
So Tumami's the first. I'm really excited. I've got a new product coming by the end of the year, which is still in the Tumami family, but then I'm kind of branching out. What I want to supply people with are like tools in their arsenal, you know, bringing out the big guns if you just need to add something.
Yeah.
You know, and also training, I always go back to taste. So training people's taste buds to say, this tastes like it needs more acid. This yeah. tastes like it needs more umami. So how can I add that? And what's really interesting, and I'm sure will interest your listeners, is why does umami satisfy our cravings for deliciousness? Like, why are we so drawn to umami? Where do we first experience umami? Breast milk. There's a high kind of instance of those glutamates in breast milk. So we're craving being back at the mother's breast. So
that's fascinating. I didn't know that.
Fascinating. Mm. Yeah. Look into it, pop it in the show notes.
Absolutely. Yeah. Wow.
Yes.
It's a really interesting connection, and obviously like what we're talking about, the taste palette and the flavor palette being developed in utero. Now, so you just said before, how can we get that in New Zealand?
Oh, so I am very happy to get it to New Zealand. Tell your local providors, sort of small delis and things about it, and I'll connect you with my distributor and we'll get it to New Zealand. I'd love that, 100%.
Oh, it would be amazing too.
Thank you.
And we'll be keeping an eye on the new product coming out as well.
Yeah, thank you, Nikki.
That's great.
Watch this space.
yeah. So I guess how would you sort of sum up like the overall kind of mission of all of the work that you do?
All my work comes back to people. I have a deep love of people and connecting with people, and food is a really easy way, like an easy in, right? If people know that I cook really delicious food, they're going to want to be my friend. If I want to connect with someone, I'm probably going to talk about food with them.
Yeah.
Right? It's just such a, it's a common language. And so it all comes back to that connection, the joy that we started the conversation with. And also, I think my superpower is bringing out the best in people. You know, that comes back to being a teacher. I just want to see everybody live their best life. And food is such a big part of somebody living their best life because not only do they feel great, but they're also, you know, they vibrate with just vitality. So if I can bring people that by empowering them to shop well, to cook well, to eat well, to connect with their family and their local growers, producers, providors, shit yeah, that's a life. That's great. I've added value. I'm happy with that.
Yeah, it's amazing. And such a great kind of mission to just fuel the enthusiasm and fuel everything that you're doing.
All about fanning the flames. Thank you, Nikki. Thank you. Back at you.
So I guess we can't sort of dismiss that there aren't kind of issues within the food systems and within, you know, society with regards to people's relationship with food that are still cropping up here, there and everywhere. But I guess what do you think we could all be doing to try and make a bit of a difference in the way we see food?
Well, I think we can vote with our dollar every time that we buy. Sometimes we go to the supermarket. I'm sure it's similar for you guys where there's sort of like a couple of players, right?
Yeah.
It's a bit like that here. And it's undeniable, particularly from an access perspective, that most Australians are shopping at supermarkets. And it's so blinkered to and foodie bubbled to say, oh, you should, like, you know, I know I've said it a million times, support small and all of those things, but it's a really elitist perspective to say that that's all that everybody should be doing, because it's also then setting up barriers that are unrealistic for some. So that's why I always go back to what you can do, right? Yeah. So what we can do professionally is watch our language and watch our privilege when we are offering advice to people. What we can do as consumers is do exactly probably what you're already doing, which is prioritizing and valuing food and kind of budgeting to buy the best you can, right?
That's yeah.
And, yeah, I think a lot of it does really go back to language and just kind of awareness and just checking in and asking, you know, where is this coming from? For example, recipe writers, for a long time it was about how much you know and how good you are, but it's just like, well, people aren't cooking your food. They're probably looking at what you've done. And I think actually cooking shows for a long time were like, you watch it and go, oh, I could never do that. So I'll just go back to the comfort of what I do know. And on the topic of media and food media and wellness media, there is so much confusion and misinformation. So if you have a platform, just check in when you are about to post something and ask yourself from a like a social responsibility, from a professional, right? Like just kind of go with like use your gut and use your intuition and ask yourself, is this adding value to the conversation? Is this virtue signaling? Or is this kind of like what place is this coming from?
Yeah.
Because unfortunately that's another reason why, as you say, there are so many problems. Because when somebody is faced with too many choices in the sense of knowledge and information and too many conflicting opinions, then they'll go back to the familiar. And who has the biggest share of voice? Who's got the biggest budget when it comes to talking about food? Yeah, it's not the vegetable board.
No.
I can tell you that much.
No. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's some of the big, big multi-million dollar corporate companies. Yeah.
And I think the other thing though, what I am, you know, because I'm a glass full person, what I am enthused by and hopeful for is that people are being much more vocal and kind of speaking out when they think that a big dog is doing the wrong things. And they're checking. They're like kind of like, you know, they're just like, hey. That's not something you should do. So like a really good example of that is a supermarket here had, you know, you spend a certain amount of money and you get these useless plastic toys and they're just like, okay, well, that's not useful for people. We've had enough pushback from our populace, from our demo. So what can we do that is that but also maybe a little bit more responsible? And so they've brought out a different kind of, you know, more about I think seeds or, you know, just generally better.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm kind of hopeful that there's a new generation of people in leadership as well that do have positive intentions. And I've met some of them. It's exciting to see, you know, because when you've got those big dollars and you do have a little bit more of a social conscience, that's when change will happen.
And it's important to still have the conversations, I guess, at every level as well, because everyone can do something, but it might look different depending on what your situation is.
Everybody's on the spectrum, so please don't pass judgment on somebody because they're eating a whatever it is versus a whatever it, like, yeah, all of that kind of binary, this versus that or whatever. Like, I saw a fantastic post from a nutritionist that I follow here, the Curious Nutritionist, where she was talking about muesli bars and saying, you know, if you've got in the classroom, for example, if you've got a lesson that's like comparing two muesli bars and the ingredients and whatever, like, what you're not recognizing is that sometimes some kids in that class are buying that, you know, their parents are buying that muesli bar because it's all they can afford.
Yeah.
Or, you know, they might just have aversions to certain things or whatever it is. So, like, again, inclusive, considered, responsible use of platform, please. Mm. Put that into an acronym.
Shorten it somehow. So one question I like to ask my guests is, if you could change one thing in the world of food and health, what would it be?
Access. I would subsidize fresh food through the taxation of multinational and fast food. I mean, they're paying huge taxes. Why isn't that going back into the food system in ways that make fresh produce more accessible, but also facilitating skills-based learning so that it's not just the access but also knowledge of how to utilize that produce too?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I would make I would put healthy eating in inverted commas in the bin. And just encourage everybody who works in the space to just like subliminally say it in their heads but then never say it out loud or consumer facing, right? And the same goes for like kind of ableist language or other kind of like the diet culture of, you know, for example, I was sitting at a round table of sort of policymakers and people in the space on like an obesity, anti-obesity thing, and I put my hand up and I was just like, I know I'm an outsider in this room, but why are we still calling it that? maybe there's other language that we can use that's more inclusive and more respectful and more reflective of what the actual issue is here.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's what I would change. So access and language. Access and language. Yeah. Yeah.
And maybe even, you know, joyful eating is...
Oh, man. J-O-Y.
Better way of referring to it.
Yes, joyful eating.
Rolling off the tongue than healthy eating.
Oof.
Yeah.
It even sounds yuck. They've done studies. They show it's not just kids but adults have a lessened expectation of flavor when it's got healthy before blah. Like if it's a healthy smoothie, you know it's going to be full of like even if it's not, even if it's delicious.
It might be like amazing, but it's that perception, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. And also, like I would highly recommend that it's not like, you know, eat more vegetables. Maybe it's like kind of be more seasonal in like, you know, this is the time to be eating more asparagus and broad beans and green leafies and lettuce, just because each vegetable deserves its time in the sun. If you just say eat more vegetables, people are just like, okay, cool, but where do I start?
Yeah. And or they'll just eat the one or two veggies that they only eat and never explore anything else.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Carrots, potatoes, onions. That's fine. That's really good. I'm glad that you're braising the shiitake out of – you know, stuff. I'm glad the slow cooker's getting a workout, the crock pot. However, it's like it's a whole world of flavor just waiting for you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess you've done so much and it's so great to see everything that you've been doing. But I guess, is there anything coming up that you're really looking forward to?
Yeah. Yes. I am a month away from submitting the manuscript for my next book.
Exciting.
Thank you. It's kind of, it's a follow on from In Praise of Veg in the sense that it's still veg forward, but it will be different. It won't be as big because I want to make it more, make it feel more achievable.
Yeah.
Even though In Praise of Veg, I really think the recipes inside are for beginners all the way through to, you know, people stuck in a rut that have been cooking for decades. Get it for your mum for Christmas. but I really think the next one's going to be fantastic for, you know, what do I give to someone who's moving out of home or I've just fallen in love with cooking. Where do I start? So that's the next one. Some more TV will be coming, will be forthcoming. more Nomcast of Phenomenom's ilk is coming. You can expect to see that in the new year very soon. And I think I'm doing more. What's been really exciting is I'm doing more kind of general broadcast radio and broadcast TV and just kind of, you know, spouting my opinions all over the place. The thing that I'm really excited about with that is that it's forced reading because every week I'm sort of talking to authors and filmmakers and artists, and so it's kind of my neuroplasticity is being stretched and molded and refreshed. It's good to challenge yourself to do new stuff because otherwise, yeah, you calcify wherever you are.
Absolutely. Even at a young age.
even at a sprightly age.
So, Alice, if listeners want to follow you, find out more, where's the best place to find you?
You can find me all over the socials as Alice in Frames. That's F-R-A-M-E-S because you can't hear it, but I'm wearing glasses. and you can find me at aliceinframes.com. You can find Tumami and more about Tumami on byalice.com.au. And you can check out pages and recipes from In Praise of Veg at inpraiseofveg.com. That's it.
Fantastic.
Come and find me. Come connect with me. I love hearing from people, particularly, you know, Nikki, you got in touch and said, I heard you on a podcast. I thought you were great. If you enjoyed picking up what I put down, I too will enjoy picking up what you put down. So I look forward to chatting.
Yeah. Oh, and it's been so great, Alice. I could stay here and chat to you for hours, but thank you so much for your time.
You are so welcome.
I really appreciate it. And just so great to hear, you know, straight from the horse's mouth about everything that you've been doing. And hopefully it sort of inspires others to sort of start exploring different ways of approaching food and especially veg.
Amen to that.
Nay! Oh, well, thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Thank you.
Well, here we are, episode 10 all wrapped up, and that is a close and a wrap on season 2. I hope you have enjoyed the episodes across this season, and I always love to hear what your favourites have been, so don't be a stranger. Don't forget to subscribe so you get notified when any bonus episodes are released. If you really love listening to All Things Food, please consider leaving a review so more people can discover the podcast and share it with any friends or family that may also enjoy listening. Any questions or requests for future episodes, please drop me a line over on Instagram and Facebook at Nourish with Nikki. Until next season, take care, stay well, and enjoy plenty of good food with friends and family over the holiday season.